All right. Kirk's not here today, obviously. But he asked me if I would talk about Jerusalem. And since Jerusalem is one of my favorite places on the face of the earth, I said, absolutely. So he gave me an entire PowerPoint and I just threw it away. No, I didn't. I changed it. So he could probably give another whole presentation on Jerusalem and it would be really different and it would be better probably. But sorry, you get me today. That what you were just hearing was called the Holy City. And when we came up to Jerusalem, well, I'll show you the one picture where we're coming up to the walls for the first time, but the bus was playing that over the loudspeaker in the bus. And it, you know, they're saying Jerusalem, oh my goodness, it is it's quite an emotional thing. It's quite quite amazing to experience that. And I'm really thankful that I had the opportunity to experience that. We're going to talk about Jerusalem today. Jerusalem has mentioned, it's very, very important in the Bible. It's mentioned, 667 times in the Old Testament. It's mentioned 139 times in the New Testament. And then there's other ways it's referred to. It's referred to as Mount Zion, the city of David, and other names as well. So there are maybe 1,000 different times that Jerusalem is referred to in the scriptures. We're going to take a trip today. We're going to start at modern day Jerusalem, and then we're going to see some of the sites. We're going to see the terrain, and then we're going to look at ancient Jerusalem and how it was different or how it might have been different from what we see today. So first of all, we're going to fly. Probably we're going to have to fly into Jerusalem. It's possible to get to fly into Israel. It's possible to get there other ways, but almost everybody that visits comes by plane. So here we are coming in on our plane. We're going to be flying in across the Mediterranean because that's really the only way you can fly into Israel. All the nations around Israel have closed their airspace to planes that are flying into Israel. So if you want to fly into Israel, you're going to have to come down and fly in over the Mediterranean, even if you have to make a big loop around to do that. We're going to land at Ben Gurion Airport, which is on the outskirts of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is up there in the upper left-hand corner, and Tel Aviv is a major, major metropolitan area. There's almost 4 million people that live in the Tel Aviv area. It's a modern, modern city. It is very, very secular city. It would be very similar to New York City. But it's a big modern city. Now, the airport is named Ben Gurion Airport because it's named after David Ben Gurion. This is George Washington to the Israelis. He is basically the founder of the nation of Israel. He was the first prime minister of the nation. If you've seen pictures of this guy, he's the one that had the really wild hair and it would fly back in the wind. And this is really tame for him in this picture that you're seeing here. Okay, now, it is only... Yes. He was not a warrior. He was a statesman. He was not a general at all. No. Tel Aviv is obviously at sea level. It's a coastal city, and Jerusalem is inland. It's only about 34 miles. It's not a big country. So that is, as the crow flies, that's 34 miles. It's on by going by road. You're going to have to go a little over 40 miles, and it's going to take you about an hour to get from the airport to Jerusalem. You're going to have to take a bus or a taxi or something like that, but you're not going to fly there. They don't have an airport in Jerusalem that you can use. I think they're afraid of having an airport close by and planes and things that people might do with planes. So you're going to go up to Jerusalem. If you read in the scriptures, it talks about going up to Jerusalem. There is a mountain range that runs down the center of the nation of Israel, right along here. It's like the spine. It goes from north to south, and Jerusalem is right on that spine. So Jerusalem is at about 2,500 feet. So you don't go very far inland, and you're going to have to go up 2,500 feet. So when people traveled to Jerusalem, especially in the olden days, they would either travel along the coastal highway, and then you would turn east and go up to Jerusalem, or you would travel along the Jordan Valley, and then you would turn west and go up to Jerusalem. But either way, you were going up to Jerusalem. So we're going to have to go up to Jerusalem. I'd like to point out, since we're looking at the map right here, that's 34 miles. This distance is about 50 miles. And this is Gaza down there. That's called the Gaza Strip. And that's one of the big cities in the Gaza Strip is obviously Gaza. And that's a short rocket launch away from Tel Aviv and from Jerusalem. And they have sent rockets to both locations. So it's not, you don't even need a real sophisticated rocket to go 50 miles. So that's why Israel spends a lot of time and money on rocket defense. And they have to. Okay, so Jerusalem is southwest of Tel Aviv. It's along the mountain ridge. And the population of, this is well, I'll get to that in a second. The population of Jerusalem is, it's not anywhere near as big as Tel Aviv. It's, the metropolitan area is a little bit bigger than 1 million people. Within the city itself, it's just a little under 1 million people. Jews make up about 62% of the population of Jerusalem. Muslims make up about 35% of the population, and all Christians of all stripes, anybody who would call themselves a Christian, make up about 2% of the population of the city of Jerusalem. The Israeli people consider Jerusalem to be their capital. And all the branches of government are headquartered in Jerusalem. On this next slide here, the Knesset is the parliament. And the Supreme Court building is in Jerusalem. The premier and the president, they live in Jerusalem. So they consider it their capital, but the international community does not consider Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel. And there are no embassies in Jerusalem. They would like to get embassies in Jerusalem, but there aren't any there. Now, before the election, Trump said in one of his debates that he was going to move, he was immediately going to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And he hasn't done it. And every 6 months, a bill comes to him that the president has to sign a waiver or he has to move the embassy to Jerusalem. And presidents for 20 years have been signing the waiver. And last month, Trump signed the waiver again. He postponed it again. So he has to make the decision again by December 1st. So, but as of right now, the embassy, U.S. embassy, is still in Tel Aviv with all the other embassies. Well, it's one thing when you're a politician running for office, you can say almost anything you want. But once you become elected, you find out that there's lots of things going on that you didn't know anything about. So basically lots of people from the State Department and other places have come to him and said, this is a really bad idea and you don't want to do this. So essentially they say it will interfere with the peace process. So he's going to try to push the peace process through and see if he can get it moving before December 1st. But he's still saying that that's on the cards, that he's going to move the embassy. So I can't look into his mind, but he's been getting lots of people telling him not to move it. Well, obviously, Israel wants they want everybody to move their embassies to Jerusalem because they want that to be the de facto capital of Israel. Okay. So here is a map of the Jerusalem metropolitan area. So this isn't just Jerusalem here. This is bigger than Jerusalem. And I'm showing you this map for a reason. First, there's a dotted line that runs, well, kind of runs all over the place here, but mostly it runs across and then down the middle. That line was, Israel declared their independence in 1948. Immediately, all the nations around them went to war with them, and they basically fought to a standstill, which was a win for Israel because if they lost, they would have been annihilated. And so when that line you're looking at, that dotted line, is the 1949 armistice line. And everything on the left side of that was controlled by Israel, and everything on the right side of that was controlled by Jordan. And so the part that is on left of that line is sometimes referred to as West Jerusalem. And the part on the to the right here of that line is sometimes referred to as East Jerusalem. The western side here is a modern city. It's beautiful. It's very modern. The right side, not so much. Okay, it's just not anywhere near as nice as the left-hand side over there. Now, what happened is that in 1967, there was a very short war. It's sometimes referred to as the Six-Day War. And Israel went to war against Syria and Iraq to the north and Egypt to the south. And they just kicked their cans. And it was over pretty quickly. But halfway through, those nations were trying to get Jordan to join in the battle. And they were saying, if you don't join in, you're not going to share in the booty when it's all over. And so they were telling Jordan they were winning, which wasn't true. And so Jordan believed them, and Israel kept saying, don't don't start anything. You don't want to do that. And Jordan did. 3 days into the war, Jordan joined the war. And so Israel went, okay, fine. And Israel took them out too. And they captured at that point East Jerusalem. And then East Jerusalem is just a little tiny part of a much bigger area, which is referred to as the West Bank. So if you've heard that talked about, this is part of, little tiny part of the West Bank. The West Bank always is a little bit confusing for people because it's on the east side of Israel, but it's called the West Bank. And it's called the West Bank because it was part of Jordan that was on the west of the Jordan River, but it is on the east side of Israel. So they captured all of Jerusalem. They captured the West Bank, and they've controlled it ever since then. You often hear people say that Israel needs to trade land for peace. And they've done that. They traded the Sinai to Egypt for sort of peace with Egypt. But when people say that, when you hear people say that now, what they're saying is really that what Israel needs to do is they need to go back to the 1947 boundary, this armistice line that's right here. They need to give up all the land that they captured during the Six-Day War, and then everything will be fine and life will be, you know, all will be well. Israel's never going to do that. And so I want to show you why they're never going to agree to those terms. We're going to zoom in here. And this is a zoom in of the line. And so now I'm inside of Jerusalem. The last slide was the metropolitan area. Do you see anything here that would make you think that Israel is not going to give up this territory? It's this little region right here. This little region is a walled area. It is monstrous walls around this. And they're about 35, 40 feet high. And it is very small. It's only 1 kilometer, 1 square kilometer. So you can walk this easy in an afternoon, probably every street in a day. But this area, if you look, has all kinds of important sites that are important to Christians, important to the Jews, important to the Muslims. So this is referred to as the Old City. So here is a nicer picture of the Old City. You can see it's got a wall around the whole thing. For the Christians, what's really, really important is right here, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is right here. And this is this church covers acres of territory, and in there is probably the location of Golgotha and the tomb, Jesus's tomb. So he probably was crucified, buried, and rose again from right there. So that'd be important to Christians. This area over here, oops, I've lost my pointer. Oh, here we go. Okay, so this area over here, this is the Temple Mound where the temple was a long time ago. And then down here, this is what's where the Jews go to pray along the retaining wall. It's called the Western Wall. And so that's very, very important to the Jews. And they don't want to give that up. And then for the Muslims, you've got up on the Temple Mount, they refer to it as the Noble Sanctuary, but on the Temple Mount, you have the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And so that's important to them, and I'll explain why. So let's look at some of these. This is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. It doesn't look like much, but it is just monstrously big. And this is the front door. It's a funny thing that happens at the door. There are, I think, 5 different Christian groups that control this church, and they all fight with each other all the time over who's in control. And so they're afraid. Every night, there are people from each group that sleep inside the church because, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law, right? So if you were not to be there one night, somebody would probably take your stuff. So every night they sleep there and they lock the door. But when they lock the door, none of them will trust the other one with the key. So there's a ceremony every night where a Muslim guy comes over and he locks the door and locks them inside the church every night. It's a big deal. This is supposed to be Calvary. This is Golgotha right here. Okay, now it's inside the church, and you're and like, I'm looking at this going, okay, this is not what I was picturing at all, right? Your Bible, it's supposed to be an outcropping. It should be outside the city wall, and this doesn't make any sense. Well, if you look here real carefully, do you see in here? There's rocks. There's plexiglass over rocks. They have built this entire shrine over this entire rock outcropping, so you can barely see the rocks. And if you want to, you can get down on your hands and knees, and you can crawl in here, and you can put your hand in there, and you can touch the rock. And they get in line for like, you know, a long time just to go up and touch. I touched the rock.
So they're saying Golgotha was inside the
cathedral. Well, it is now. Somebody built a church over it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so you totally miss. You're thinking, oh, it's this outside site you can go and see. And it's been enshrined inside this monstrous church. Now, the church is so big that you turn and you walk for a while and you come to the tomb. That's not what strikes me is what the tomb looked like. Well, the tomb, again, it's the site. It's not. It's the location. It's not the actual tomb. The a Muslim overseer 1,000 years ago wiped it clean. I mean, he wiped it to the ground and knocked everything down. And so they just said, well, it was right here. And then they built this thing over it, the shrine over it. So this is supposedly where the tomb was. And it is inside the same building. So again, this is a really, really big building. Do you see who this is? This is Trump. Trump and his wife were in Israel in May, and he was the first sitting president ever to go to the Old City. And he visited two sites, and one of the sites he went to was Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So here they are coming out of the church. And so here is the one of the sites that's sacred to the Jews. This is the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall, and this is what it looks like at Sukkot, which is Feast of Tabernacles. So that would be a time when lots of people would come. You could probably hardly move down there. By the way, those are all men that you see right there, because women aren't allowed there. Okay, so this is the Western Wall, and then up above there is the Temple Mount, but they don't normally go up on the Temple Mount. Occasionally, some of them will, but most of the rabbis tell them not to go up there because they might accidentally step upon the spot where the Holy of Holies were, and that would be like a impeachable offense or something. I don't know. So they don't normally go up, but they will go here, and they want to get as close to this corner as possible, because then you're as close to the holy as you can go. There's actually a tunnel that goes in here, and you can go in the tunnel, and you can get even closer, and you can go in there and pray. But you got to have a special ticket, I think, to go in there. We went there. It was. Yes. Thank you. Here is our president at the Western Wall. They had to close the whole thing down just so he could go to the Western Wall. But he did. He went to the Western Wall. And his wife went also. Notice I'm not showing them together because they don't go to the same spot, right? The women have a spot a little further to the south that they can go to where the men can't go. And yes, that's the way it is even today. So there's some women that have been trying to sue in the Israeli Supreme Court to get access to the whole thing, but so far they have not been able to get it. So men have the northern part, and the women have the southern part. I don't remember the five. One's Greek Orthodox, one is the Arminian, one is the Roman Catholic. I don't remember who the other two are. Yeah, but it's five groups.
How old is the church?
The church in the one I was showing you? It had been knocked down and rebuilt a couple different times. And what we were looking at, I think, was probably most of that was from about 1,000 years ago, about 1,000 AD. Yeah, this wall you're looking at right here is this is Herodian. This was built by King Herod, so this wall's 2,000 years old.
Okay, so how did all that stuff survive?
Oh, they didn't destroy. When the Romans destroyed Jerusalem, they just went up to the top of the Temple Mount and they just threw stuff off the top. They just knocked. They just wiped it clean. They didn't destroy the Temple Mount. It would take an atomic bomb to do that. I mean, this thing is. It's acres, and it's just a big flat piece. And why would you do it anyway? So they didn't knock it down. They just knocked everything off the top and made it like a level playing field. That's all they did. Yeah, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was originally built around 400 AD, and then it was knocked down and it was rebuilt, and it was knocked down, it was rebuilt. And so what you're looking at there is most of that's about 1,000 years old. Yeah. Okay, this is the gold. Everybody knows this, the Dome of the Rock. This is like the most, it's like when you go to Jerusalem, you see this from almost everywhere. This is beautiful. I mean, it really is. It's really rather spectacular. It's so colorful. You can walk right up to it. I don't think you can walk in, but you can look in. But this is surprisingly not the important piece up there. Everybody thinks this is the problem right here. And it is in the sense that it's probably situated right where the temple was. So if you're going to rebuild the temple, you're going to have to get rid of this thing. But this is like a ceremonial mosque. It's not actually an actively used mosque, and it's not particularly big. So believe it or not, even though you know everybody always thinks about this, this is the important piece of real estate up there to the Muslims. This is called the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And the reason that this is important is the Muslim, in the Quran, there is a story that they have a chapter in the Quran that's called the Night Journey. And in that chapter, Muslims believe, and it says, and the Muslims believe that Muhammad went on a journey one night, and he got on a winged horse with a tail of a peacock, and he flew to a location, and from there he ascended into heaven. And he went to the seventh heaven. He had a conversation with Moses and Jesus and a bunch of other people. He did all the talking, which I think is supposed to show that he's in charge. And then he talked to God. God gave him some messages, and then he came back. So that's called the Night Journey. They say that he came to this mosque, this right here, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So this is, they got an Al-Aqsa Brigade that is there to defend the mosque. And so this is considered the third holiest site in Islam. After Mecca and Medina, which I understand those two because those two are in Saudi Arabia. This one doesn't make a lot of sense. Muhammad never was anywhere. He wasn't within 200 miles of Jerusalem in his entire life. He was never here. They say, well, it was a vision. He had a vision, and he went there in a vision. Well, but he wasn't there. Then on top of that, in that story, it never says Jerusalem. It doesn't, that's not what the location is called. So all it says there is the farthest mosque. He went to the farthest mosque, and then he ascended up into heaven. And it wasn't only later that they decided, well, that was Jerusalem. So it's almost like they decided, well, here's this holy site to other people, we'll just take it. The final thing is, there was no, so even if it was the farthest mosque, or that's what it was referring to, there was no mosque in Jerusalem when Muhammad was alive. It was at least 100 years later before the first mosque ever came to Jerusalem. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is revered by Muslims. And so this is a point of contention, especially the fact that it's on the Temple Mount where the Jews would like to build their temple. Okay, any question about that? All right, we're going to take a city tour of Jerusalem, and we're going to do the Old City here. The Old City is divided up into four regions, and these four regions are called the quarters. And you've got, starting on the southeast down here, you've got the Armenian quarter, and going counterclockwise, you've got the Christian quarter, Muslim quarter, and the Jewish quarter. So I want to talk to you about each one of these. As you come up to, I said this is the part I was, as we came up to Jerusalem, this is the site that you see. And if you can see out the front of your bus, this is what you see. This is the walled part of the city. And it's just like, wow, this is like where Jesus was. This is where David and Solomon, and it's pretty cool. And then they play that song and it's even cooler. And so, but it is neat to see. And we don't have any experience like this here in the United States. I mean, where do we have walled cities like this? Quebec has a walled city in downtown Quebec, but most places over here, they don't have anything like this. This is what the city gate looks like. This is the coming in from the west. This is called the Joppa Gate or the Jaffa Gate. It's you can see the people here, so you can see this is like 35, 40 feet high. It's probably 20 feet thick. And so this is you can get up there and you can fight a long time. The gate, when you go in the gate, you got to go in and turn. So they didn't want somebody to just come up with like some kind of a you know, a battering ram and just be able to batter through. You can't, because you got to make that 90 degree bend, and everywhere along the way there would be people there ready, waiting to take you out. So anyway, this is what the Armenian Quarter looks like. The Armenian group is, there was a group of monks that came to Jerusalem from Armenia, which was it's a breakaway part of Turkey, but they came in the 4th century. They came here and they've been living there ever since. And so they control about a quarter of, it's not actually, it's more like 15%, but one section. And it's very, very quiet. I chose this picture because this is what it looks like. There's never anybody on the street. There's no shops. It's just really, really quiet. This is the Christian Quarter. Christian Quarter is loud. It is, there's shops, there's businesses everywhere. There's churches and businesses everywhere in the Christian Corner. It's a happening place. That's a lot of fun. This is the Muslim Quarter, and it is crowded. It is congested. You walk it in the evening, you just kind of got to muscle your way through. The streets are only maybe 6-8 feet wide, and it's just, and there's no lanes, and you just go. And it is probably great for pickpockets, but I don't know that there's a lot of pickpocketing that goes on, but I would think it'd be great for that because it is so crowded. This one is one I just found, but we could have gone any time. We could have just picked up a camera and gone click and done something like this, because it was a lot like this. And then the Jewish Quarter is beautiful. It is magnificent. It's got wide streets and it's just fabulous, you know, and that's the southeast corner. And you're like, wow, that's kind of not fair. Well, there's a reason why the Jewish quarter is beautiful. This is a picture of the Jewish Quarter back in the early 1900s, and you can see the Dome of the Rock there, and the Muslim Quarter's up there, and it's really crowded and very busy and very tiny street. Well, look what the Jewish Quarter looked like. Looked just like the Muslim Quarter. Looked exactly the same thing. This right here was the most important synagogue in all of Israel. It's called the Herva. But this is another important one here. But that was the really, really important one. This is what it looked like in the early 1900s. This is what the Herva looked like in 1949. See, this area of Jerusalem ended up on the east side of the armistice line. The Jews tried to get into Jerusalem, but as you see, coming in from the west to Jerusalem is really hard to do. And they couldn't get in. And so the Jews that were in there fought mostly to the death, and then they surrendered. And so this is what what the Jewish Quarter of Jerusalem looked like when Jordan took over. And they basically leveled it. What wasn't broken down, they pretty much broke it, the rest of it down. So because of that, in 1967, when the Jews took over the area, well, they just build everything brand new. And so it really is beautiful. So this is what the Herva looks like today. It is just magnificent. You know, they put it right back where it was. I mean, they just right there. There were Jewish sanctuaries in the old city of Jerusalem that were destroyed after Israel's independence. Jordan just destroyed them. And if you think about what would happen today if Israel went in and started destroying mosques, the outcry from the world would be unbelievable. But this is what happened back then. Yes?
What's the significance of the dome?
I'm not sure, but I don't know. But the arch here was very, very important. See this arch right here? For if you go back and you look at pictures of the Herva online, you'll see that for about 10 years, all they had was this beautiful arch. And they basically, it was the Jews saying, we're going to rebuild this, and it's going to be right here, but we're going to take our time and we're going to do it right. And so they put this arch there, and that arch was very significant to them. And then they incorporated the arch into the building, rest of the building. Yeah, that they both used the domes. Yeah, they have a much flatter dome. And if you notice on the, you can really tell the Muslim, minuets or whatever, that's a minarets. They're much more pointed at the top, but these are much flatter on the, I don't know why. Yes. Yes. Well, because they've been there. Possession is 9/10 of the law. 90, yeah, nine-tenths of the law. They've been there forever. And so they don't, by the way, the Christian quarter is, the Armenian quarter is, a lot of that is Armenian, but the Christian quarter, it's mostly shops. A lot of those shops are run by Muslims. It just happens to be in the section of the city called the Christian quarter because that's where the churches are. 2%, they say 2% of Jerusalem is Christian, but probably most of them live right inside, a lot of them probably live inside the old city. Okay, this is a typical city street in Jerusalem. It's pretty narrow. It's going to have soldiers with rifles and guns pretty much constantly patrolling the streets because, well, there's things that happen there. So they're always there and they're armed and they're loaded and they're ready to go. All right, so a little bit about the topology. Jerusalem is very easy to defend from every direction except from the north. On the east over here, there's a big valley called the Kidron Valley. It runs all the way north to south, all down the old part of the city. On the west side over here, there's the Hinnom Valley, and the Hinnom Valley curves around to the south, and it joins another valley, which is sometimes called the Central Valley or the Tyropian. So you might have heard it. I heard it said Tyropian as well, but they meet here. And so there's like this natural defense around the southern and the eastern and the western part of the city. So when Jerusalem has fallen over and over and over and over again over the years, they always fall from, you always attack it from the north because, of course, that's the easy way to get. You're actually a little higher than the city itself if you come in from the north. So that is the way it's always attacked. Yes? During some times of the year, but mostly no. No, they're wadis, so that means they're dry probably 90% of the time. But during, they get flash floods when it rains, so yeah. 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 Well, it's probably more like Texas. Texas with the wadis, except that it's a hilly version of, it's what Texas would look like if it was hilly. Yes. The Kidron goes down, maybe 100 feet from here down to the bottom of that. That's like a 100-foot drop down. I'll show you some other pictures of it. That's the deepest one. Ben Hinnom's pretty deep. Ben Hinnom might be 100 feet as well. The central is all we know today is where they are today. These have been filled in with debris over the years, and they would have been much, much deeper in the past. So the Central Valley probably was a lot deeper during Jesus' time. They think that's where all the blood and guts from the temple was just drained right down into the... Yeah, so it had to go somewhere, right? Okay, this is what Jerusalem looks like from the west. So this is looking east. And so you're looking at modern Jerusalem here with the Knesset and the Israeli Museum. I think that's where the Dead Sea Scrolls are. Are they in the Israel Museum? There is Mount of Olives over there. And then look, you're looking at East Jerusalem. This is West Jerusalem. This is modern. That's not so much. Notice that's a lot more crowded. The buildings are smaller. What do you see beyond East Jerusalem? Nothing. That is the most barren. It immediately becomes the most barren wilderness you've ever seen in your life. It's called the Judean wilderness, and it is still barren today. So you can imagine what it was like in Jesus' time or David's time. It is just horrible. You can see the Dead Sea from this. I mean, we're way up in the air. You can't see it from the ground, but from this eye view, you can see the Dead Sea down there, and it's only about 10 miles. Now think about that. The Dead Sea is 1,000 feet below sea level. So you're at 2,500 feet. You got to drop 3,500 feet in a very short distance. And so it's all downhill and it's all through just cracks and crevices. And it would have been a very dangerous, but it's probably still dangerous today, but it would have been more dangerous in the past. And what do you see up there on the left? Jericho. So the road to Jericho isn't that the story of the Good Samaritan? He was on the road to Jericho and it was desolate and robbers came out and beat him. Yeah. That's not terribly surprising. You would not want to travel that area by yourself. You got lost, you'd be dead. So you'd want to know with somebody that knew where they were going and just travel in a group. So, and it's still like that today. Okay, this is from looking from the south. So you're looking to the north. This is the Kidron Valley here. So that's Kidron, that's big. Ben Hinnom comes around here and turns this way. And then the central is actually right here, but it's really kind of hard to see that. That one's not anywhere near as deep. This is looking south from Jerusalem, and really I'm just showing you this to show you that it's hilly. It's not quite as barren as it is directly to the east, but it is barren. And of course, Bethlehem is down there. So you can see Bethlehem. If you're up high enough, you could see Bethlehem from Jerusalem. It's just not that far away. This is looking west. This is actually taken from the Mount of Olives. So this is the east side of the Kidron Valley. This is the Kidron Valley running right down here. This is the Mount of Olives has a big Jewish cemetery on the top. It cost like $1 million to get buried here. Because, oh yeah, this is prime real estate right here. This is, Gethsemane is right down here. Gethsemane is right there. There's something called the Church of the Nations, and there's actually two Gethsemanes, the Catholic one and the Greek Orthodox one, but they're right next to each other. And so they're right down in here. And then this is the Muslim cemetery right here. This is, of course, the Temple Mount and the Dome of the Rock. And here's the Al-Aqsa Mosque over here that nobody knows about, but is really, really important. And then look in the background, and you're looking into West Jerusalem, which is modern city, big, beautiful modern city. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, well, inside here, no. Yeah, but, oh, yeah, yeah. This is big. It's modern roads, big modern highway. Yeah, and mostly bus traffic because the tourists, oh, my goodness, everywhere. Okay, now, yes.
About that cemetery, how old are the graves? Did they make that?
Yes, some of these graves were, well, as you can imagine, many of the Jewish graves were desecrated when this area was controlled by Jordan. So a lot of them are, especially the ones that are up here that look in better shape, they're more modern, or last 50 years, okay? But there are probably some here that were rebuilt. Whether there's anything in there or not, I don't know, but they probably rebuilt them and did what they could. But this is a Jewish cemetery right here. And then this is the Muslim cemetery over here. This is the Eastern gate, which is closed. It is completely sealed over, and there's different theories as to why, but one of the main theories seems to be because the Messiah is supposed to come back through the from the east, and so they stopped the gate, so he can't come back. And besides that, they put a cemetery here, so no respected Jewish rabbi is going to walk through a cemetery, so that stopped him. He can't come back. So there you go. Okay. Yes.
So in that picture you had
of
Bethlehem,
mm-hmm.
It's really amazing that Bethlehem came
to
Jesus. They had to turn.
Oh yeah. Joseph and Mary had to take Jesus on the eighth day up to the temple because they have to do a rite at the temple on the eighth day. So yeah, they would have had to travel this. You're like, well, I don't really feel like it, and I just had a baby. And well, too bad. You know, you still got to do it. So, yeah, it was pretty rough. It's a rough, rough terrain. Oh, some of these are ones we took, and some of these are ones that I just found online. Okay, so we only have a little bit of time left. So very quickly, I want to talk to you about Jerusalem in the Bible, because we've just been looking at modern Jerusalem. So in Joshua 15:63, you don't have to turn there, it says the Israelites were unable to drive the Jebusites out of Jerusalem. So this was an area that was controlled by the Jebusites. Even maybe 100, 200 years after Israel had conquered the land, there were still pockets of Canaanites that lived in Israel. And when David became king, he was king of Judah, first of all. You may not know this. He was king of Judah for 7 years before he became king of all Israel. And his headquarters, his capital was in Hebron down here, which is smack in the middle of Judah. So that's where his capital was. Well, once he became king of the entire country, he wanted to have a new capital. And so he chose Jerusalem to be his new capital. Why would he choose Jerusalem to be his capital? Well, that's a really good question. First of all, they didn't own it at that point. If he was going to make it his capital, they were going to have to take it. So I want to read this. There's just a really tiny passage that talks about them taking Jerusalem. It says, "The king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, 'You will not come in here, but the blind and the lame will ward you off,' thinking, 'David cannot come in here.' Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David." So he took it. So he took it. Why did he want it? Well, he wanted it because, first of all, it was more centrally located in the country than Hebron was. Hebron was, he really looked like a Judean king if he was located there. He wanted to be the king of all of Israel, so he moved to the central of the central of the country. Also, if you think about it, if you look at this picture right here, you can see Jerusalem is right on the border between Benjamin and Judah. And David would have had a keen interest in keeping his eye on those Benjaminites, because they were always a problem. If you think about stories in the Old Testament, think about how many times Benjamin was a problem. And in particular, who was king before David? Saul, and he was from Benjamin. So David was going to keep an eye on the kinsmen, you know, his kinsmen, because, you know, they didn't want to, he didn't want dynasty heads to rear up and say, no, we're the true king. So he's keeping an eye on Benjamin. He's centrally located. Being in the center of the city, the center of the country here, on that mountain range, it was going to be very easy to defend the city. And then finally, and this is maybe the most important, there was water there. And this is a dry and thirsty land. And if you don't have water, you don't build a city. And so Jerusalem had water. The Jebusites had a city there because there was water there. And so that's why these are some of the reasons that he chose to take this location. So this is interesting, and most people do not know this. They look at their Bibles, they look at the back of the book, maps in the back of the Bible show this, the old city, and they go, oh, that's the Bible. It's Jerusalem from the Bible. It's not, okay? This is where David's city was. It's on this little tongue of ground that is sticking out south of the walled city. So it isn't even inside the current walls of the city. The walls of the city are modern, at least in terms of Middle Eastern things. They were built in 1528 by Suleiman the Magnificent. And so they're modern walls. I mean, they're hundreds of years old, so they look old and they're old, but they're not old, like old. And so this is where the Jebusite city was, and this is what David took. So here's what David's Jerusalem looked like, and what the Jebusite city looked like, and this is where the water is. The David's city was on that tongue sticking out from the walled city, which is now walled, which is up there to the north. This is where the spring was. It's called the Gihon Spring, and it's here, and they enclosed that with a wall, but it was actually outside the wall of the main city. And what they had done is they had it protected. They had to protect their water source, but if somebody got in here, they would still have water because they had dug a tunnel underneath the wall. And then from inside the city, they had a reservoir in there, and they could put down buckets and they could get water. So even if somebody broke into their water source, they still had water. So it's very ingenious. But go back to Samuel. Verse 8 says, David said on that day, whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him get up the water shaft to attack the lame and the blind who are hated by David's soul. And that's all it says. Well, it sounds like what happened is that the troops managed to get into this area here. And then what did they do? They just took the tunnel. They followed the water through the tunnel into the reservoir, and then they climbed up the shaft into the city, or at least somebody did that, and then were able to get the city gates open. Once the city gates are open, well, then the city's lost. So that's the suspicion. But, you know, you really would, you'd like to see a little more, right? You'd like a little bit more information than just this. That's all we have. But that's what it sounds like. That sounds like how they took the city. Okay, now Solomon comes along, and what does he do? Now, here's the city of David here. David, by the way, I guess I'm supposed to point out that David's palace is on the highest point in the city, and that makes it very convenient for looking over the whole city and seeing what's going on, including if anybody's bathing in the evening on the roofs of any of the other buildings. Okay, I'm just saying. So there's another story about Bathsheba, right? So he's got the high point of the city, and that's where the king's palace would be. Solomon comes along, and his job is to build the temple. David wanted to build it, but Solomon was given the go-ahead to do it. And so what Solomon did is he went up further to the north, and there was a plateau up there, and that's where the first temple was built. And so this is what Israel looked like, Jerusalem looked like during the time of Solomon. During Hezekiah's time, the city had grown in size. This was several hundred years later. And so here's the city of David, and here is the Solomon's temple, the first temple. The city has now expanded to the west, and it's moved across the central valley, or the Tyropian valley, and it's moved over to the western hill here. And there's a little bit of debate among the archaeologists about how far, whether it did it go all the way to the Hinnom Valley, or did it just go part of the way? So we're not 100% sure about this, but we know about this line here, the northern wall, and then there was a second northern wall outside of the first northern wall, and we know that they were there. And in Hezekiah's story, you can read how the Assyrians were coming, and so Hezekiah was doing a bunch of work to build up the walls, and this is the work that he was doing. So this is what it looked like during Hezekiah's time. Now, after Hezekiah, Nebuchadnezzar came in and destroyed the whole city, right? He took everybody away. But Nehemiah came back, rebuilt the walls. And so for a period of 300 or 400 years, the city started to grow again. By Jesus's time, the city looked very similar to what you see right here. Almost the same. This is a picture that I wanted to show you that I'm looking to see how much time we have. Okay, so in blue is where the walls are now. When you go there and you see the walls, that's the blue walls. In red is what they believed the city looked like during Jesus's time. So actually during Jesus's time, of course it had the lower city within the wall, David's city, the Temple Mount, and then it went over here. It didn't extend all the way to the northwest, and it didn't extend all the way to the north, but that's what the city looked like. Now, this is the part I wanted to point out right here. Well, I may have to point. Right here, it says Golgotha, and then it says the tomb of Jesus. That right there is where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is today. And it was outside of the city wall. See, the problem is you go there and it's inside the city and you're like, this doesn't make any sense, right? They wouldn't have crucified somebody in the city. No, you crucified somebody outside the city, right outside the gates, right on the main road, so that anybody that was traveling would go, oh, I don't know what they did, but I don't want to do it, right? It was a lesson for people. And so here's the road right here. Here's the gate. Here's the road coming out if you want to go to Joppa. And so here's the walls, here's the gate, here's Golgotha, and here is the Church of the Holy, here is the tomb. And all of that is covered today with this huge, monstrous church. And that's most likely, if you want to talk to me about afterwards, why we're pretty sure that's where it was. Now, some people, a lot of people that go to Israel, they go, no, the Garden Tomb. See the Garden Tomb up there, way at the top? That's where Jesus was crucified. That has to be. It looks like a skull. It does. You go up there. It's got two eyes and a mouth. It looks like a giant skull. It's beautiful. It's serene. There's trees blowing. It's what you picture it should look like, right? And so that's where lots of people, we went there. And it's right outside the wall. And there's a road that goes right by it. There's even a gate right there, the Damascus Gate. The problem is, that's what you're seeing today. That's not what it looked like back then. Back then, that spot was nowhere near a road, and it was nowhere near the wall, and so there's no reason to crucify anybody there, because it wouldn't have been a lesson for anybody. Nobody would see it. So this really makes a lot more sense. Probably it's correct. Okay, I'm going to show you just one more. See this picture? Look at that. This is Zion's Gate, which is on the south side of Jerusalem. Those are bullet holes, okay? Those are bullet holes from, some of them are from the 48 war and some of them are from the 67 war, but you see lots of bullet holes as you go around the side of this thing. I want to read this to you. During its history, Jerusalem has been destroyed at least twice, besieged 23 times, attacked 52 times, and captured and recaptured 44 times. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And that is scriptural. It's Psalms 122. I don't have time to read the whole thing. I was going to read the whole psalm to you, but I'll just read verse 6 and 7. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you. Peace be within your walls and security within your towers. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and we can go. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for your word. Your promises are true and you'll keep them forever. I thank you for the opportunity I had to go visit Jerusalem. I pray for the Israeli people and the Muslim people that are there and even the ones that call themselves Christians, that many of them will call upon you and be saved. I pray for the salvation of the inhabitants of Israel. I pray for the peace of Jerusalem and ultimately that Jesus would come back, the Prince of Peace, and that we would have peace forever. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.